Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about a few subjects. I'm going to talk about the foisting of Babylon, the foisting of Sodom and Gomorrah, the continuing decay of society due to the incessant efforts of the evil perps to normalize pedophilia, to totally muck with the minds and the brains of young children. And it's all being normalized. I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the scorched earth of the directed energy weapons or the scalar weapons or whatever the hell they are that's wiping out large chunks of the surface. This car fire in car. I mean, the irony of even using the cover story of a flat tire causing this conflagration in Carr, California, C-A-R-R, it's just the stupidest, flimsiest cover story I've ever heard, and just shows the utter contempt and disdain the powers that be have for ordinary people, that they can, with a straight face, look at you and say, oh, that huge fire and all the houses reduced to ash and everything, and the cars, you know, melted, that was due to a flat tire. I'm going to talk about the scorched earth going on, compare it to scorched earth examples in the past, but now it's been taken to another level. The disintegration of all these homes, property, people is the new form of collectivization, and I will elaborate on that during this commentary. I'm going to talk about the continuing communization, the rampant cultural Marxism that's part and parcel of all of this. When you listen to a freak show like Maxine Waters, what you're really listening to is cultural Marxist, communist, socialist dogma that's destroyed countries like Rhodesia and South Africa, and which is now in the process of destroying large parts of America. It's a coordinated, comprehensive effort. It's scorched earth in the form of directed energy weapons, or whatever they are, and on the other hand, the moral decay that's set in by the communism, by the socialism, which is all part and parcel of a tribalist collectivist effort to just reduce America and the West and the whole world to a state of vassalage, of decadence, of utter degradation. And then in the members section, I'm going to talk about what would a coup look like if the powers that be wanted to get rid of Donald Trump in order to create the situation, circumstances ripe for a civil war. How would they go about doing it? What would be the ways they would do it? Okay, so we'll talk about that as well. First off, let's talk about the Babylonian drag queens. You heard that right, the Babylonian drag queens. Here's a interesting story from LifeSiteNews.com. American Library Association endorses drag queen story time for libraries across U.S. And this is happening in Australia. It's happening all over the place. Dateline July 25th, 2018, LifeSite News. Drag queens reading kids' stories about homosexuality and transgenderism appears to be the latest craze sweeping public libraries in the United States and Canada. On July 21st, the, quote, Intellectual Freedom Committee, unquote, of the Association for Library Service to Children, ALSC, published a blog post detailing highlights from the American Library Association annual conference in New Orleans. ALSC is a division of ALA with a stated mission of, quote, building healthy, successful futures for all children. Isn't that nice? Quote, interested in bringing drag queen story time to your library? Question mark. One of the bullet points read, ALSC committee members received tips for optimizing success from library pioneers who have already done it. We also had the chance to meet a drag queen who talked about the value of offering this program, including fostering empathy, tolerance, creativity, imagination, and fun, end quote. It refers readers to the official website of Drag Queen Story Hour, a program centered around, quote, drag queens reading stories to children in libraries, schools, and bookstores. Unquote. It was created by drag queen Michelle T. and Radar Productions in San Francisco. The group's express purpose is capturing the imagination and play of the gender fluidity of childhood and giving children unabashedly queer role models so kids can imagine a world where people can present as they wish when dress-up is real. The website quotes Brooklyn Public Library Youth and Family Services Director Judy Zuckerman. Oh, that's a nice tribalist-sounding name, Zuckerman. If you do the etymology on that, Zuckerman is Sugar Man, which relates back to sugar merchants. You know, the same kinds of sugar merchants that brought black slaves to Haiti and, you know, the Caribbean and places like that to work the sugar fields. Anyway, the website quotes Brooklyn Public Library Youth and Family Services Director Judy Zuckerman as endorsing the program because, quote, it celebrates diversity, unquote, and encourages children to, quote, embrace unfettered exploration of self, unquote. San Francisco librarians claim to The Guardian that no taxpayer funds are involved as the privately run nonprofit Friends of the Library pays a $250 stipend to DQSH's production company for every event. Regardless, the event's content features a great deal of content most parents would deem offensive and at the very least not age appropriate. You think? The group's photos depict men wearing fake breasts and a wide variety of garish women's clothing, reading with children as young as infants, highlight two drag queens with the sexually suggestive names Lady Busty and Miss Shameless, and promote the upcoming children's book Born Bad by C.K. Smuha. Born Bad is about a wolf who doesn't want to be a wolf, meets a variety of animals who can change their physical characteristics, and ultimately dresses up as a sheep. How appropriate. The website cites a variety of favorable media coverage, of course, that contains several revealing details, such as a Guardian report revealing that one drag queen read a book about how families can have a mom and a dad, or just one mom or two dads. T's admission to LA Weekly that the books we choose are about social justice, and The New Yorker's account of drag queen Lil Miss Hot Mess attempting to get an audience of kids to repeat, "When I grow up, I want to be a drag queen." That's right, you heard that right. This drag queen entity, Lil Miss Hot Mess, attempting to get an audience of kids to repeat, "When I grow up, I want to be a drag queen." DQSH also sells a dragtivity book targeted at children between the ages of 4 and 12. It gives kids an inside look into what it's like to be a drag queen, encouraging children and the adults in their lives to continue exploring drag and gender together through activities such as create your own drag name and circle your pronouns. As LifeSite News reported last week, similar events are taking place in Canadian libraries as well, promoting similar stories of acceptance, diversity, and all different types of families to expose small children to LGBT concepts and non-binary people. Yowza. We already talked in the past about how laws have been set up in Canada and elsewhere. So if anyone criticizes anything like this, suddenly they got hate crimes, statues thrown at them, etc., etc. And now the pedophiles are coming out in droves, and they've got a new title for themselves. They're calling themselves minor attracted persons or minor attracted people. And they are saying that, oh, they're just attracted to minors. They have no intention of harming them, right? As if indulging in sick pornography does not somehow harm children or leaves children unharmed, right? This is their twisted way of thinking. Since many of the so-called ruling elite, hybrid reptile pedophiles that they are pedophiles, they want to normalize it. That way they provide another layer of insulation for themselves. They've always had the system working on their behalf. Now they want to just get everything out in the open and make Weimar Republic Germany look pale in comparison with this society-wide, civilization-wide Sodom and Gomorrah, anything goes minor attracted person onslaught, and these minor attracted people, they're seeking to, in general, to become a protected species, to be guarded and protected by hate crime laws, to be guarded and protected by the media, to be guarded and protected by academia. And that's already happening. You have all these pedo academics coming out and talking about how, oh, you know, an attraction and wanting to have intercourse with the little children, it doesn't matter if they're screaming their heads off, that's beside the point, right? That's just an orientation. It used to be a mental disorder. Now it's just an orientation. It's just like how some people, you know, prefer things that are blue and some people prefer things that are green. Well, some people, you know, they prefer children, right? So they're normalizing that. And the academics, the quackademics, bought and paid for quackademics, are normalizing that. Here is another interesting article, and this one comes under the category of you can see this coming from a mile away. And this was in a lot of the mainstream news. This is from The Sun in the UK. Women's jail shock, transgender lag, sexually abused four female prisoners days after arriving at West Yorkshire Jail. The inmate was sent to a women's prison despite not having had gender reassignment surgery. In other words, he just rocks up and says, oh, I'm a criminal, yeah, but I'm really a woman, even though he still has male parts. And so they throw him in with a bunch of women, and surprise, surprise, he systematically begins sexually assaulting them. A transgender prisoner has been accused of sexually assaulting four female inmates after being sent to a women's prison. The first of the alleged attacks took place within days of her arriving, calls her, at Newhall Jail, Wakefield, West Yorkshire. The inmate was sent there despite not having had gender reassignment surgery. It is claimed she was visibly aroused when she allegedly assaulted the first inmate. They're just twisting around the pronouns here, right? She was originally sent on remand to Newhall Women's Prison after a judge heard how she had been living as a female for more than 2 years. The alleged attacks will reignite the debate over whether transgender prisoners should be sent to women's jails before they have had surgery. It is claimed the first attack happened within days of the transgender prisoner's arrival at high-security Newhall, Wakefield, West Yorkshire. The alleged victim, an inmate with whom she had struck up a friendship, said the remand prisoner stood close to her and touched her arm while her erect penis was sticking out from the top of her trousers. You see, this is all designed to engender confusion. This is all designed to promote this binary Z, billion and a half different genders. The guy's got a peckerwood, so he's not a female. Okay, let's get that straight right off the bat, okay? And look how this article is written. The prisoner stood close to her and touched her arm while her erect penis was sticking out from the top of her trousers. It is alleged she subsequently made inappropriate comments about oral sex to another prisoner before giving her a bear hug. A third alleged victim says she was also attacked, and a fourth woman prisoner claims she was kissed on the neck. The transgender prisoner has now been sent to a Category B men's jail. Well, at least they got that part right, whatever Category B is. Jeez. This is part and parcel of an all-out assault on everything that's wholesome, everything that's normal, everything that's family-orientated, everything that is geared up towards continuing the human race. The human race as we knew it from the past, not this borged-out billion-and-a-half gender trending in that direction Borg society. It's equal parts Borg, equal parts depopulation. Now, in coordinated attacks across Sweden, all these immigrants, Muslims and Africans, are just torching the place. Again, that comes under the category of, you can see this coming from a mile away. There's no doubt in my mind they're being coordinated. I don't think they're doing this on their own. I think, as in the case in Germany, when quote-unquote white people or white police officers were known to be instructing the Muslim immigrants, the Africans, to start showing up in large numbers at major population centers during holidays, during the Christmas and New Year's festivities. Suddenly, the places, the plazas, the cities would be just inundated with all these raping, groping, sexually assaulting immigrants. And per the tenets of the School of Frankfurt, cultural Marxism, the system is weighed heavily against the victims of crime. So the victims of crime nowadays, they're the ones being arrested. They're the ones being given hefty fines for speaking up about being sexually assaulted by these raping immigrants. Well, because, you know, it's racist. It's racist. There's a recent story that just broke in America. There was a 7-year-old girl in Home Depot. For those who don't live in America, Home Depot is similar. You've seen this in other countries where they have this big warehouse-type place with all kinds of tools and gardening tools and power tools and lawn furniture, et cetera, et cetera. That's Home Depot. And some Muslim immigrant came along and tried to carry away a little 7-year-old girl. She was prevented by the girlfriend of the father of the little girl and store employees. They intervened and they kept the perp in place until the cops showed up. Chances are they're just going to let this guy go because that's what they want. That's what the system wants, is to turn loose all these perps, all these pedos, and protect it under hate crime laws, protect it under the media onslaught of racism, Islamophobia, etc., etc. So now we have Sweden in flames. We've seen this in France already. This is proxy warfare, folks. It's all a coordinated effort. It's all going on now. And they're starting with the children. Now, here's another article. This is The Times, and it's a Scottish newspaper, thetimes.co.uk, actually United Kingdom. The byline reads, 5-year-olds to choose their gender. Well, right off the bat, folks, 5-year-olds are not mentally, emotionally, intellectually, or spiritually equipped to choose their gender. I wasn't even attracted to girls till, you know, probably after most of my peers, right? Call me immature, call me whatever you want. But I didn't start recognizing the curves and whatnot of females in my classes till kind of late, you know? Year 6, year 7, year 8, I started to notice. Actually, the first women that I was attracted to were grown-up women on TV. Linda Carter on Wonder Woman. People like that. That's who I was attracted to. And it wasn't even a sexual thing. I just thought it was cool that she had this like lasso that could compel people to tell the truth. And she was an ass kicker. And right? So now, they're telling kids, oh, at 5 years old, you can choose to be whatever gender you want. But of course, that's nonsense. These pedos, these perps, are the ones who are going to be choosing their genders for them. This has happened to friends of mine, folks, where their boys in school were told by counselors, quote unquote, and teachers, well, haven't you ever wondered what it's like to have a vagina? Wouldn't you like to have a vagina? Wouldn't you like to be a little girl? And these are kids, folks. And then, you know, just stop and think about the drag queens I was talking about. Some of them dress up in these, not even garish, these scary outfits that would make Baphomet look at them and go, GTFO, you're scaring the hell out of me. That's what some of these drag queens look like when they're sitting in front of these little boys and girls talking about gender fluidity and wanting to change your gender and dragatism or dragtivists or whatever they're calling themselves, right? They wear these scary Luciferian outfits, Luciferian makeup, and then they sit there in front of these children. And the point of relevance, folks, was I knew I was a boy. We had not been brainwashed yet into this concept of genders. And now it's not a he, it's not a she, it's a Z, Z-E, right? Z-E. There's dozens of different genders according to the state of New York. See, and that's where the wordplay comes in. where it's no longer biological sex, male, female. They throw the gender word out there, which then they can make malleable, bend and twist and distort any which way they want. I identified as a boy from very early on. I just, not until a little later, did I start to realize, well, yeah, you know, there is a difference between boys and girls. I saw that right off the bat. Boys are boys, girls are girls. Girls do girl things, boys do boy things. There's nothing homophobic or there's nothing gender biased about that. That's just the way it was back then. See, today's younger generations, they have no frame of reference. So when I say I was kind of late catching on to the attraction to the girls kind of thing, it's just that the hormones didn't kick in and I just didn't become obsessed with the fair sex like I did later, okay? That's all that means. But the point of relevance is it took me that long to figure it out. It took me till I was year 6, year 7, year 8 to go, wow, she's pretty. Wow, she's really nice. Ooh, I get nervous when I'm around her. Ooh, I get kind of like flutters in my chest and I'm too shy to talk to her, right? Now they're telling 5-year-olds, oh, you can choose your gender. No, they were born with a certain sex. Don't be changing the language on us, you freaky pedos. You know, like previous article I read in The Sun. Oh, she, her. No, that's a perp that's equipped with a, you know, peckerwood that's going around assaulting women who cannot escape from him. He put himself in a situation where it was like a happy hunting ground for him, right? And now there's these freaks around the world that are saying, oh, I may look like an adult, but I'm really a child. So you can see where that's going. They're going to want to hang around with children. The perps always went to where the children were anyway, whether it's becoming a band teacher or becoming a soccer coach or becoming a little league coach or, you know, whatever the case may be, perps go where their victims are. And one of the ways they're doing it now is changing the language. It's like how a baby went from a baby in the womb to being a fetus. Oh, you know, yeah, you just had the spontaneous miscarriage, spontaneous abortion. Had nothing to do with a whooping cough vaccine. You got it 28 weeks and the flu vaccine on top of that. It just, you know, it's just a fetus anyway, isn't it? Right? And now they're telling folks, oh, well, you know what? I know that you tested positive for, you know, a baby, a fetus, ma'am, missy. But don't tell any of your family and friends for the first 7, 8, 12 weeks because, you know, you don't want to raise their hopes because, you know, the fetus isn't viable yet. It could, you know, something could happen and you may not carry the baby, the fetus to term. That's what they're telling people now. Turn everything into a big dark secret. Don't let anyone know. In the old days, in some cultures, they mark the birth date as the moment of conception, which makes sense to me. But now it's like, ooh, it's a big military secret. Yes, you've tested positive, like it's a bad thing, for an impending birth of a baby. Oh, no, a fetus. But don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone about it. Oh, by the way, all of your family and friends, they must get the DTaP, whooping cough vaccine, before they can see the baby. Otherwise, they don't see the baby if it gets to the point of being born, actually. Because nowadays, breech, cesarean, premature birth, that's all the norm now. Because of just the hammering the poor babies, fetuses get during the prenatal phase. And Janice Barcelo talks about this. So relatives and friends are being told, you can't see the baby for the first 6 weeks. So there's that Kabbalistic number again. 6 weeks, you will not see the baby unless you get the DTaP whooping cough vaccine. And there's been a number of people who've already suffered grievous injury from having gotten that vaccine as an adult just because they wanted to see their own or someone else's baby. And that's not the half of it. From what I understand, people are being told that you have to get the DTaP vaccine before the birth of every baby. So if a woman plans to have more than one child, not only will she have to get the DTaP again, but everyone around her will have to get the DTaP again if they want to see the new babies. So they don't even get lifelong immunity. They're being told, oh, it's not lifelong immunity. You got to re-up. You got to get another shot over and over and over again for every baby you're going to have and all the people around you. It's just madness. So it's all about changing the language, folks. changing the language. It's not a baby anymore. It's a fetus. It's not sex. It's not biological sex. Boy, girl, male, female. It's a gender now, gender fluidity. It's all very insidious. And according to this newspaper, The Times, and I'll read it to you because it's pretty freaky, five-year-olds to choose their gender. Children as young as five in Scotland are to be allowed to choose their own gender. According to teaching materials created jointly by Education Scotland, the Scottish Government and the NHS, that's a National Health Service in the UK, eye roll, suppressed groan, National Health Service. According to teaching materials created jointly by Education Scotland, the Scottish Government, and the NHS, pupils will be asked to decide whether they are a boy, a girl, or neither. Campaigners for family values and some politicians have criticized the move, saying that children would be, quote, confused, unquote, by such an adult subject. Chris McGovern, chairman of the Campaign for Real Education, I like that one, told the Scottish Mail on Sunday, quote, at this age, children believe in goblins and dragons and don't understand adult issues yet. Well, I'm not even going to go there. These discussions at such a young age will be very confusing. And that's the whole point. I've said many times over and over again that confusion is a psyop, and now they're meeting out this confusion to children. Okay, now I'm going to talk about collectivization, the modern form of collectivization, and scorched earth. And it helps to have a historical perspective. I tend to look at things historically. I tend to look at the past as a way to understand the present and where we may be trending if we don't do something about it in the future. Scorched earth had two meanings, basically. Like when the German army invaded Russia, excuse me, the Soviet Union, Operation Barbarossa, Stalin ordered scorched earth, basically denying anything of value to the invading German armies. And again, the Germans got the jump on the Russians, excuse me, the Soviets, because the Soviets were planning to invade Eastern and Central Europe. It's a well-known documented fact. Even modern-day Russian historians are talking about this. The Germans just happened to get the jump. So what Stalin ordered was complete scorched earth. Anything of military value to the invading enemy was going to be put to the torch or evacuated further east. And when I mean evacuated, the Soviets picked up entire factories, folks, and moved them behind mountain ranges in the Urals, the Ural Mountains, and where they continue to pump out T-34 tanks, artillery trucks, etc., etc. If the Germans really wanted to win, they should have found a way to destroy those factories in the Urals, but that's a whole other story. Later, when the Soviet Red Army invaded Eastern and Central Europe, likewise, anything of economic value, entire factories were ripped out by the roots and shipped east. So it was scorched earth. Anything of military value to the enemy will be put to the torch, and to hell with the civilian population. That's beside the point, okay? Collectivization refers to that period in the 1920s and 30s when Stalin ordered, and this happened in the Ukraine, not just in Ukraine, but elsewhere in what became the Soviet Union. Basically, anything of value, which was owned by the peasantry and the farmers, was taken by the state. Seeds, farming implements, weapons, everything you can think of, to the point of reducing the people not just to destitution and poverty, but to starvation. I mean, just remember the quote from Leon Trotsky, aka Lev Davidovich Brostein. What did Trotsky say? You are starving? This is not famine yet. When your women start eating their children, then you may come and say we are starving. Who else but one of these psychopaths would even say such a thing? And collectivization led to the starvation of millions. Millions, way more than the 10 million. And the starvation of the Ukrainians and others within what became the USSR, it lasted for decades. It wasn't just the 1930s, it was the 1920s. right after the Bolsheviks took over. So that's collectivization, basically the state taking over everything. And that's why in these countries that are communists, nothing works, because the state takes over everything. There's no incentive for the people to work and be productive and build their own dream. No, that's all been taken away from them. And that's what communism is essentially all about. I think of the idiot Americans, you know, these dreamy American communists who went to the Soviet Union to see the workers' paradise, and then they were imprisoned, tortured, starved, you know, died in these gulags, right? But why? Because they were viewed as counter-revolutionaries. They were viewed as spies. Oh, who are these Americans that, you know, have all this money and all this wealth and influence and affluence, and they're coming over here, and they must be up to something. And that's how communism is. It eats their own. And some of these Americans that wound up going to Russia, excuse me, the Soviet Union, and were thrown into gulags and tortured and starved and beaten, some of them just committed suicide. They just couldn't cope with the horror of what they were being subjected to. Well, you know what? It's, you know, that's all about creating your own reality, folks. You believe in this nonsense, and then you buy into it. Communism always eats its own. Okay, and another aspect of scorched earth is when an invading force destroys everything. Think of the Mongol invasions. When cities refuse to surrender, or the commanders of garrisons and cities refuse to surrender, and when the Mongols, by then they learned siegecraft because of their experiences in China, they would co-opt everyone and everything. They would wipe out people that to them were not useful or not useful as slaves, but they would let the blacksmiths, people who make the catapults and the siege engines and the cartographers and the scholars and the scientists, they would let them live and work for the Mongols, right? So by the time the Mongols moved westward, sieges were old hat for them because of the huge fortified cities in China they had to overcome. So if these cities refused to surrender, they were usually, not always, but sometimes, they were given the option. Okay, surrender and, you know, we'll let you all live. And if they didn't take them up on the offer, when the Mongols took the place over, whether a combination of starvation of the population or they suborned someone into opening one of the gates to let them in or through some other ruse, whatever the case may be, eventually they conquered the city, they would slaughter everybody. I mean millions and millions of people. And they would destroy everything too, all the livestock, dogs, cats, people, goats, sheep, everything. They would put everything to the torch. The Romans did this too. When a city refused to capitulate or a village refused to capitulate, they would just wipe everything out. They would hack the legs off of the cattle and pile them up in a huge pile. And I mean, all this horrific stuff. That's what invaders do, folks. Whether it was the Mongols, the Romans, whatever the case may be, it was total annihilation warfare, where they would kill everyone and everything and then put the place to the torch. During the Napoleonic Wars, cities that obstinately resisted the French, cities, towns, and villages, were given over to, you know, sacking and pillaging by the soldiers, and often as not, the place would be put to the torch. The British in India did the same thing. Under Arthur Wellesley, who later became Wellington, all these Indian villages would be put to the torch. And then you saw in the American Civil War what the federal armies did in the vast Mississippi Department, Mississippi area, Louisiana, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Virginia. I mean, just huge swaths of land just rendered uninhabitable, torched. You have General Phil Sheridan's campaign in the Shenandoah Valley, which for decades thereafter the locals referred to as the Burning. You have Sherman's march through Georgia and the Carolinas, Sherman's destruction of Meridian and Jackson, Mississippi, etc., etc., etc. We're just talking about invading armies destroying things, rendering the place uninhabitable, basically. Wiping out all the railroad stations, all the railroad tracks, all the factories, all the foundries, textiles, you name it. And then with the advent of air power, this destruction was taken on to a whole different level. You have the mass terror bombings of Germany, Hamburg, Berlin getting hammered over and over and over again. The scientific advisors, if you want to call them that, around Churchill were German-hating types like Sally Zuckerman. Oh, there's that name, Zuckerman again. And Professor Lindemann, who advocated mass bombing of populated centers to de-house the population. They wanted to render the people that survive homeless. And often as not, they resorted to firebombing to create conflagrations. The person who executed the will of Churchill and Sally Zuckerman and Professor Lindemann. Lindemann was a eugenicist. His dream was not only to wipe out every last German, but to use science to create this worker bee class of people who were stupid, who had no ambition, and who would never recognize the level of their degradation and oppression and were just smart enough to work. That was Professor Lindemann's ideal of a worker subservient class, a true eugenicist genocidal maniac. These were the ones that were advising another genocidal maniac, Winston Churchill. And the person tasked with doing all this was General Arthur Harris, known as Bomber Harris, a.k.a. Butcher Harris, head of RAF Bomber Command, that just laid waste to large swaths of Germany. Insignificant towns, villages, cities, it didn't matter. From a military standpoint, there would be no factories or anything worthwhile that was helping the German war effort. Didn't matter, they just got blasted anyway. And that wasn't even enough. Then they sent their dam busters to take out the dams in the Ruhr Valley and cause massive flooding, right? So that's another example of just annihilation. And then you had General Curtis LeMay, who later became Chief of Staff of the Air Force. He masterminded the bombing, the firebombing campaign of Japan using the B-29 Superfortresses, flying at low altitude at night, dropping incendiaries, as well as some time bombs to kill or thwart the firefighters, which led to conflagrations in Tokyo and Osaka and a number of other cities. Just one after the other, Japanese cities put to the torch. The firebombing campaign was so effective in LeMay's eyes that he deemed the subsequent atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki as unnecessary. And he went public and said after the war, we didn't need to do that. Then later he was forced to recant. That happens quite often, right? Because the narrative to this day is they needed to nuke Japan to save a million lives, a million American lives, in a subsequent invasion of Japan, which was never going to happen. High-ranking officers in the Army, Navy, Army, Air Forces knew there would never be a Japanese invasion because they knew it was not necessary. Whole nother story. Curtis LeMay, the firebombing campaign of Japan. Another example of scorched earth. And there are different forms of this, as area denial, so-called, where they use chemical weapons or biological weapons. It's still a form of mass murder, but then they use euphemism, semantics. Oh, it's area denial. We don't want any of the enemy or people or anything to live in a certain area, so we'll just hammer it with chemical weapons or biological weapons or whatever the case may be. Area denial, right? That's what they call it. So what's this have to do with collectivization? Well, rather than taking everything away by the state, by the Bolsheviks, by the communists, They just destroy things. They just wipe things out, render places uninhabitable. Rather than have people just starve in general, they just wipe them all out, and whoever is left over winds up starving, right? And homeless. I mean, you look at the neighborhoods in California, and we're just talking about California. We're not ignoring all the other places that have been hammered by these directed energy weapons, but places in California, and that was prime real estate, folks. The wine growing areas, really nice neighborhoods. They didn't hammer the inner city. No. See, a lot of people think of California as a liberal state, and definitely with these communist socialist Bolsheviks in the state legislature and the governor and the senators of California, all a bunch of communist collectivists. I can understand why people think that, but if you're talking about the population, the demographics, there's a lot of people. I'm not falling for the whole false left-right paradigm thing, but there's a lot of red mixed in with the blue. There's a lot of Republicans, there's a lot of First Amendment, Second Amendment types there, a lot of military veterans. So they don't use the directed energy weapons or whatever they were to hammer the inner cities. No. What they do is they hammer all these neighborhoods in nice areas and wipe out all the cars. And man, the videos that I've seen, the interior of a large tree just like a furnace on fire, cars melted, the windshields of cars like melted. These are not normal fires, and they're leaving a lot of the trees alone in some of those neighborhoods. The damage is very selective. It's very precise. And the technology exists, has existed for a long time. No one is talking about what's happened to all these people that were in those houses. And the people that have been interviewed, it's very interesting what they're saying. They're saying, well, next thing you know, the power went out, and we couldn't get our garage door open because it was electric and the power was out, so we couldn't get our cars out. We had to fumble around in the dark with flashlights because the power was out. Suddenly the fires hit. So what they're doing is similar to the RAF Bomber Command, these night air raids. They're hammering these places with these directed energy weapons at night. And now the power companies in California are saying, well, based on what happened with last year's horrific fire season, this year what we're going to do is we're just going to shut the power off in a number of places which we deem to be high fire risk areas. You see, because they don't want all these people start talking about power outages again. The power outage is a signature, folks. The power outages prior to these conflagrations are telling you that something energetic is going on, which is knocking out the power, bringing down the power grid momentarily, while these places get vaporized. And by saying ahead of time, oh, we're going to stay ahead of the curve this time, we're just going to shut power off in large parts of, the country, large parts of California where we think there's going to be fires tip there. And then that way we stay ahead of the curve and, the damage won't be as bad. But the real reason they're doing that is they don't want all these people talk about blackouts, talk about the power going out right before the fires. So that's going on too. And remember what some of the original, and it may not be the same weapon system, but it bears repeating, the Bali bombing in Indonesia, in Bali, Indonesia. Some eyewitnesses talked about the power going out right before these explosions occurred, right? Right before the devastation occurred. So keep all that in mind. It's an all-out comprehensive attack. And now you have the Muslims running amok in Sweden. They're coordinated attacks. They're firebombing, large parts of Sweden. We saw this already in France. We're seeing the police stand down in Victoria, in Melbourne, Australia. The African gangs run amok and start thrashing everything, even thrashing police cars. the police are saying, "Oh, we conducted a tactical withdrawal, right?" And just left the Africans to run amok and go crazy, right? Now, you know, if an Aboriginal teenager just happens to sneeze in a menacing, frightening way, the beatdown occurs. They're on him like, you know, flies to honey, and, you know, the beatdown ensues and mace, and then, you know, the kid dies in custody. That's not even considered racism, okay? But these African gangs running amok, oh, that's nothing. We beat a tactical retreat. I'm reminded of Monty Python, you know. I can't remember which night it was, but brave Sir Robin ran away. He had his minstrel singing, you know, when the guy was fleeing. Yet another example of a stand down. So what we're seeing, folks, is this comprehensive effort. It's just this full spectrum assault. They're bringing in MS-13 into America. They're bringing in the African and the Muslim criminal elements. And you mark my words, at some point, there's going to be a wholesale release of violent criminals. It's already happening, okay? But they're just going to start releasing en masse. Violent criminals, pedophiles, you name it, they're just going to turn them loose in the streets because they want a total chaos to ensue. And this is where the communist types like Maxine Waters and others like her, that's the role they play. They're openly calling for attacks on Trump supporters. This used to be called sedition. This used to be called insurrection. But now it's just, you know, it's freedom of speech, I guess, right? So they're openly calling for attacks on Trump supporters and anyone on the administration, even on the president himself, right? You remember in the old days when, not so old days, but when someone just sneezed menacingly in Obama's direction, oh, Secret Service is on them like flies to honey. But nowadays, because they're moving in this direction of insurrection, of civil war, they're turning Antifa loose all over the place. Similar policy with them, hands off, they can do whatever they want. So they're moving their pieces around on the chessboard. They're bringing in the cartel gangs. They're bringing in the Muslim and African mass immigrants who they know will not assimilate, who they know will seek to impose Sharia, who they know will be intolerant of the natives and cause problems. It's all calculated. And then they're going to do this mass release of all these prisoners. And we've seen this before. And then now you have these Maxine Waters types, who's kind of like a modern-day version of Robert Mugabe. He was the Zimbabwean president who, just the moment he took over, he unleashed like genocidal warfare against the rival tribesmen. It didn't matter that they were black. That was beside the point. They were from another tribe, and therefore he wanted to wipe them out. And then he just brought down the economy. Rhodesia went from a country that provided a surplus of farm goods and agricultural produce and, you know, the high standard of living. And then, you know the story. The sanctions worldwide. On the one hand, they're getting hammered by the sanctions. And on the other hand, they're getting hammered by a communist insurrection. And the Rhodesian military dealt with a communist insurrection. The Rhodesian military is one of the finest in the world, finest in modern world history, despite all the handicaps they had to deal with. But it was ultimately, it was all the sanctions, et cetera, which led to making Rhodesia turn into Zimbabwe, making Rhodesia ruled by the so-called black majority, and then now you see what Zimbabwe is all about, a total communist hellhole, starvation. And that's what they want to do. They want to turn loose all these Robert Mugabe types, Maxine Waters, and all these other people, and they want to do the same thing in America, okay? So the scorched earth collectivization program is going on. And if you look at a map, what they're doing is they're hemming everyone in California. All the outlying affluent neighborhoods, nice neighborhoods, they're torching them because they don't want people to head for the hills. They don't want people to, form up in guerrilla bands in the countryside. No, they're burning all those places up, and they're taking large swaths of forest with it. Okay, not just the houses, but they're torching large parts of the forest and all the poor animals out there. Because then those places become declared emergency zones and basically come under federal control. So it's all very calculated. They're going to hem people in more and more and more in California by torching these outlying areas. Okay? So keep all that in mind. In the members section, I'm going to talk about what would it look like if the powers that be decided to remove remove Trump from office in order to precipitate a civil war. What would the mechanics behind that be? What it might look like, right? Because we have had bloodless coups in the past. We had Nixon being removed for the silly Watergate thing. I mean, Howard Hunt was the guy who masterminded the break-in at Watergate, but his black bag guys left tape on the door so any half-rate watchman or security guard could find it, which is exactly what happened, which was meant to happen, right? They could have done that a lot better, but the idea was to embarrass Nixon and get him out of there because Nixon was starting to do protectionist measures that would actually benefit the U.S. economy and U.S. trade and U.S. The U.S. economy, and of course that's not going to fly with his masters. So he kind of strayed off course a little bit. So I'm going to talk about that. What, if it comes to that, how they may decide to remove Trump, the different methods they might use depending on, circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying based on what we know in the past, right? I talked about the coup to remove Nixon. There was Harold Wilson, Prime Minister in England, who was removed. The scurrilous kind of media attack upon Harold Wilson, orchestrated by the U.S., CIA, and other agencies to get him out of the way. Whitlam in Australia, how he was removed, right? So we have a precedent. These things have been done before to other heads of state. So how would it be done if they wanted to get Trump out of the way just to cause more trouble? Okay, so anyway, more about that in the member section.